been murdered. All the friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. And the bird said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of The Call. It is a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. Overcast getting a shout out on Facebook this past weekend.
It's loved everywhere. I'm telling you, like I said, even if it doesn't be, if it's not in existence anymore, I think you still need to keep it going. It's like a trademark, you know?
I know. I think we need to get Overcast needs to cut us a check is what they need to do. But anyway, here we are.
Well, speaking of that, remember the dilly dilly phrase, or not remember, but the dilly dilly phrase from Bud Light.
Yeah.
So there's a brewing company called Dilly Dilly something, and they're sending that company a cease and desist letter because of that name. So, wow. Hey, yeah, if they could do it, why not? We should get some royalties here.
That's right. Well, I mean, I don't know what Bud Light's got against mead anyway. You got bad mouth mead on the commercial. That's what I like to drink now. It's kind of my thing, but whatever. We're here to talk. It is the Red Eye Review. We are here to talk Ravens and Lions. And let's start
Tigers
off.
And Bears.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Yeah. That's what the Lions were saying after this weekend.
That's
oh, my.
Right. That's right. It was definitely a good game to watch. It was a different game than I thought. Going into the half, I definitely wasn't expecting what it was 20-0. But before we get into the game, I do want to bring up Jimmy Smith. He got injured during the game. Obviously, it looked like, and I think it's pretty much known as a torn Achilles now. He was having issues before this game. He's out for the rest of the year. Josh, what does this loss mean? Because you and I were talking this entire season and saying how he was having a Pro Bowl year.
He was, man, and whether the voters would have, you know, jumped on that, that remains to be seen. But he was having one of his best career years, and since we drafted him, and he had a few good years prior, but it wasn't really to that magnitude. And he was having solid before this game, and I like to see the average now after. But the team was letting up less than 200 passing yards per game. I think it was like 187, 189, 192. So he's part of that unit. This unit has been very strong, very healthy, especially with Brandon Williams being out a few months ago. And the running game took a hit as far as the run defense. And one has to wonder, and we were talking about this amongst the fans in the stands, man. We were like, if he's been playing, and Eric Weddle actually addressed it in his post-game press conference, if he was playing with that injury for weeks, because Eric Weddle was alluding to it's been bothering him for weeks, why was he able to go out there? Was it – you know, was it a okay thing to play? I don't understand the whole Achilles injury per se. I'm not well versed in that area, but one has to think this is why he was held out in practice all week, and then he would play on Sunday. And granted, he was having a great year with that injury, but one has to wonder why was he allowed to do that when it just finally gave way?
Yeah, that's actually my next question was going to be for you. So you got a crystal ball there. You know what I'm going to ask. But this has been an injury that it's been nagging him all season. He hasn't really practiced throughout the weeks leading up to any game for a while now. He was always in the did not participate list because it was known he had this ankle injury that was bothering him. So my question to you is, should he have been out there at all? Because if it was nagging and bothering him, it was only a matter of time. His ankle was kind of like a ticking time bomb this season. And we'll get into like how he was good even through it. But should he have been out there at all, knowing that he was already kind of injured?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, that bucks our theory and trend because the trainers and the doctors thought he was okay. But it makes you wonder again, you know, why? You know, what was it that serious? Was it, you know, just keep playing until something happens? Or, you know, not to put his career or his injury in jeopardy, but you just really have to think. I mean, I don't understand, you know, the magnitude of, you know, maybe diagnosing it early in the season versus letting it play on it. That's something that we're always going to have a question about. But then out of nowhere comes this PED suspension. I'm like, okay. When I first heard it, I'm like, all right, what now? But after really settling down and really diving into this for a minute, here's my take on it. I'd like to hear yours. My take on it was, because I did hear the pieces that the Ravens knew about it a week ago, but he was going through his normal appeal process, so they just kept it under wraps for now until – and then apparently we would have found out anyway, because apparently they were saying even if he was healthy through this game, we would have known waking up on Monday morning, and then he wouldn't have played the last four games of this year anyway unless we made the playoffs. So my theory is maybe that's why he was playing – you know, through all these games, is maybe it was hurting him. He used these PEDs to overcome that, and then now he got hurt, and now it comes to light where it's like, okay, well, now he's hurt, it doesn't matter. And then apparently, which is awesome for us, which I don't understand how the league works, we never will, but he's serving his suspension while he's on IR. So whether these next four games count towards that, I don't understand. I mean, I'm counting our blessings that if that's the case, great, but I don't understand it. You know, you're going to serve a game suspension, but you're hurt anyway. So, hey, it works out for us in the long run, but you just have to think, was that all a result of the injury nagging throughout the year?
Yeah, see, I don't know how this works, and I kind of think it's weird to go on IR and serve your suspension while you're on IR. Like, wouldn't I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me. Kind of like if you're going to punish a player in any league, you would think if they get injured, all right, they serve their time on IR, and then the next season they'll get four games. You know, and I'm not just saying that, you know, for the Ravens or whatever. I'm saying that if you were a baseball player, a hockey player, basketball player, whatever, that seems odd that that's how it would work. But
right.
I mean, but it's good Zico, for
– if he was hurt for the Cowboys, would his 16 suspension matter at that point? Would he serve that suspension after that or before? You always want to think about that now, right?
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's weird.
Yeah. Well, it is weird, but all right. So let me ask you this. You and I have been talking about this all season, Pro Bowl season. He's doing fantastic. Look at this guy. He's looking great. All right. This is awesome. And then you find out he is getting suspended for PEDs. Does this season now have an asterisk next to it where he really wasn't a Pro Bowler? He was just a guy on the juice, I guess?
You have to go to that because you can't support anybody who I'm going to tread lightly there because we're not in that position. And the reason why I take that angle, I say it does put a tarnish in asterisk because you're like, okay, well, did it help him play better? It's the whole same story when the Barry Bonds was going through his record breaking. Oh, but he took steroids. Or what, this player did this. Well, this player did that. Well, Andy Pettit of the Astros and Yankees did it to come back from an injury. He openly admitted it, but he said he did it as a way of healing faster to come back from an injury. And I've joked at the time he just wanted mutant powers like Wolverine to heal faster so he can get back on the field. And you can't fault these guys for doing it. Because it's competitive nature. It's, hey, they want to heal and regenerate quickly because when people get older, their bodies take longer to recover. So when they're older athletes and they get hurt, that's why it looks – you know, you don't hear a rookie, a sophomore, or anybody within the first 5 years getting busted. It's usually on the back end of their career. Look at all the big ones that got popped. It's – you know, from A-Rod to Roger Clemens to Andy Pettit in baseball and all that to, you know, football, and you're seeing it now. It's a lot of players – yes, there's some cases, Brandon, that their younger players will get caught with that, but a lot of the cases I've seen lately are on the back end of their career because their bodies take longer. So, you know, his season's tarnished on it, but then again, you know, I don't know the science behind PEDs. I would love to maybe dive into that one day, but I do know a little bit about steroids, and I've always said with baseball, steroids make you bigger and stronger, but they don't help with bat speed. So you can't sit there and tell me that someone who's taking steroids is going to swing the bat faster. Like, it doesn't help hand-eye coordination. It still takes skill to hit a 90-mile-an-hour pitch with a baseball bat and hit it precisely. So, I mean, I've been to the batting cages, and I swear to you right now, I'll bet anybody amount of money. If I sat here and shot up and took steroids, let me go over to the batting cages at my local little Parks and Rec and see if I can hit them, because I guarantee it won't make me better. It'll make me bigger, but it's not going to make me better in that aspect. So football is a different story. No, but that's another, you know, case for another day. But yeah, it's tarnished. It's disappointing. It's very frustrating because you're like, man, you're hoping he had a great season, and he was, and he gets hurt, and this comes out, and then you're like, huh, whatever goes that. But at the same time, through his whole body of career, he's been a solid corner for us for all these years. So, and then that also makes you wonder, how long has this been going on? Was it just this year, or was it seasons past and we just didn't know about it?
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of questions here. And I mean, just because this is another player, I mean, I feel as if he's been in this league long enough, he should probably know what is allowed and what's not allowed and what are the chances of getting caught or not. Like you said, it's a lot of older players that are doing this now. I don't know. I think it's kind of weird to have a guy who's been in the league for, what, 5-6 years now get caught for PEDs. But it could be him nursing an injury. I mean, I don't know.
Well, a lot of the PEDs and any drugs that these players take, I feel like it's more injury-related than not. When they say performance-enhancing drugs, that's what a PED stands for. It's not to make you this, what it reminds me of, Brandon, is going back to the Space Jam movie. You remember how it was Michael's secret stuff and everybody drank it and thought they played better, but it was only water?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That, you know, which reminds me of, it's like you think they think what they label what performance enhancing drugs because and if you take it for granted, like exactly what it means, it's, oh, it helps them play better, helps them run faster. No, it helps them regenerate quicker, and it makes their bodies. It's almost like us taking one, like, oh, we caught out of work sick, but I want to get back to work. So I'm going to take a drug to help me, you know, get better in a day instead of being under the weather for 5 days. You know, what do doctors prescribe you when you're sick? Antibiotics. That takes a little bit to go through your system, but it's almost the same thing unless, except that's legal and it's over the counter, prescribed by a doctor. You know, PEDs are illegal and they ban players to taking them because what if everybody took them? It's just, you know, that's what the thing is. It creates a level playing field. You get hurt, you're out until you get healed. You know, luckily us, for, you know, Aaron Rodgers got hurt, Odell Beckham got hurt. There's a lot of players got hurt this year. I don't know what they're doing on the vaccines, but Lord forbid one of those took them. I mean, you don't know what they're doing. So, and I mean, and then everybody, you remember the Ray Lewis injury, how he quickly came back and everybody accused him of doing it, but you don't know what kind of training he went through. Some players do it naturally and some players do it, you know, what that. And I've had a question posed to me, do you think Ray took something because he was old like that and no one comes back from torn tricep that quickly? Well, I don't know the guy personally, but when I follow him and read his book and he talks about that training, he said he went right to work. And no one knows the videos that I've seen, because I guarantee that has been seen by most of the fan base. Ray Lewis said his tricep was hurting so bad and bleeding so bad the night before Super Bowl, he hung his arm up in a sling because he was in pain. He didn't want nobody to know that because he wouldn't be able to play in the big game. So a lot of these guys, you know, you think they do it, but they probably don't. You know, it's just some of them get caught, maybe some of them don't. It's the same thing with anything we do in life. Humans know what's right or wrong. You know, some get away with it on the back end, some get caught on camera, some, you know, don't get caught on camera. It's just the nature of the beast. And unfortunately, Jimmy did, you know, a dumb thing, and he's got to serve a suspension. He's got to come out, and we feel bad as a fan base. We feel let down because you're playing such great football for our team and such a stellar defense this year. Now it tarnishes that. And it leaves me disappointed because I'm like, I've always, you know, believed in him, that's anything. I'm disappointed. I'm not like, you know, I'll burn all Jimmy Smith jerseys and rip all his sign memorabilia up. I mean, things happen, but you know, it doesn't take away from all the great things he's done. It sucks because it's like, man, you're right. They know better, but yet they do it anyway. And it's the same thing with the whole Gronk situation this weekend. You know, Gronkowski was frustrated. He went over and hit a player, got suspended one game. You know, he even apologized, but it was out of frustration. But people do things, and they do dumb things, but unfortunately, there's consequences, and right now we're dealing with a four-game suspension and an injury with Jimmy Smith. And, you know, a lot of people were going the whole Carmer out, and I think that's, you know, kind of harsh. You know, don't you know, you don't want to wish a player ill. Oh, you got an Achilles injury because you were taking drugs. Well, you know, some people believe in that, some people don't. I think that, you know, things happen for a reason. I mean, karma's karma, but I feel like, you know, it didn't happen because of that. It just sucks, and the team's got to deal with it and move on. But, I mean, hey, if we can get through a Ray Rice situation, this is a cakewalk, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, this isn't the first time that a player has been suspended. People are forgetting there was another player that was supposed to be here the entire season, and that's Darren Waller. And yep. He got suspended the entire season because this is the second time he got caught using – I don't know if it was a PED or just an illegal drug. I honestly can't remember, but – he got suspended twice. Nick Boyle's been suspended twice. If you guys remember, Haloti Ngata's been suspended.
Yep, even Haloti.
It's
Chris Davis on the Orioles.
Yeah, but it's like the Ravens, I don't know if they're just lax and they're not telling the players what they can and can't take. I don't know. The NFL is definitely not like the UFC. The UFC is very strict. It's like the Olympics with the UFC.
And the WWE is too, I heard.
Yeah, but like you go to the Olympics, Nick Backstrom couldn't play in the gold medal game in Sochi for Sweden because he was taking Flonase. I mean, that's a drug that is I take Flonase every morning because I've got bad sinuses. He got, you know, suspended because of that. I don't think the NFL is that strict, but either way, Jimmy Smith's out. It sucks. It does put an asterisk, I think, next to this season. But the torn Achilles, I think we all saw that coming. It was just kind of like, when's it going to happen? But let's now break down the game a little bit. So let's continue with talking about Jimmy Smith and his replacement here, Marlon Humphrey. What did you think of Marlon Humphrey's replacement of Jimmy Smith this game? Because I think Raven fans noticed that, and I also think that Matt Stafford is a guy that noticed that pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as soon as it happened, we talked amongst ourselves in the stands. I'm like, well, let's see. And I've been active when I can at the games on interacting with, you know, our social media. And, you know, and I was like, maybe this will be okay. Maybe we'll get through it. And then it was like, all right, we're up 20-0 or at the time, I believe. You know, and when it happened, all of a sudden it was like, boom. He went right down the field, and I was like, okay. Oh, all right, it's 20-7. Well, maybe we'll tighten up, and it's just a one-time thing. And then they went right after Marlon. It reminds me of what the Patriots and the Steelers would have done right away. It's, oh, your best player's out. It reminds me of what happened.
Well, that was the same thing. Jimmy Smith went down, what, against the Giants?
Yep.
So a year or two ago?
That. Yep. And I was there for that. It was the week before me and you went to see Jets, and it reminded me of the
That's
same
right.
thing. Oh, they were quiet the whole game, and then Jimmy Smith goes down, and the Giants go, you know what? They're out. And I forget who was his replacement, but he went right after him. And Odell Beckham gets, what, like 200 yards and two touchdowns in the whole game. It was ridiculous, and he scored the game winner. And the same thing happened in 2014 when we last made the playoffs. Remember, I think Smith was down again that year, and we had little Rashad Melvin, and John Brady just kept picking on his side of the field, and we lost. We had two touchdown leads in that game and lost both of them because we couldn't cover. And, you know, and that's where it was. So I feel like those teams lack depth, and that's what I want to touch on is at least we have depth at corner. You know, as soon as it happened, I seen a few tweets. This is why we drafted Marlon Humphrey, not OG Howard like you all wanted, you know, because it's we need depth there, and we have it now. And Marlon started shaky. I mean, they went right after him. Both were allowed catches, and both, I think, were penalties, if I remember. I know the one was against Jones. You know, he flat out just, you know, threw him down, and Jones caught the football anyway. So, you know, he's got to clean that up, but how about redemption? Because the tale of the football game is, yes, you can let up one bad play, but you can go back out and redeem yourself with the next play and forget about it. And that's exactly what he did. Matt Stafford was flushed out of pocket to his left. He winged the ball and went sailing over Marvin Jones's head. And Weddle and Humphrey there, and Humphrey ended up with the interception. And that was kind of like a ha-ha moment. And what a great moment for Marlon. And he got burned, but showed resilience and stayed with it, and he got the pick, man.
Yeah, definitely. Marlon Humphrey was shaky. He was a new target. Stafford was like, we are definitely going to exploit the fact that Jimmy Smith is down. This guy doesn't have a lot of experience. He's still learning. We're going to pick on him a little bit. But I do want to say, like, towards the end of the game, he definitely was able to pick it up a little bit. And he was able to get a little bit better. But you can definitely tell this guy is a rookie and doesn't have a lot of experience under his belt.
Oh, you can definitely tell. And I mean, that's what was really, really shocking to me is just the difference. I mean, you know, it was like, okay, and what do we do now? Because now they're within score, and it was concerning to me. And I was like, okay, you know, well, now we have the number one defense. Without Jimmy, are we going to think all the season's gone now? And it just shows you a complete team effort because it doesn't take one. And a lot of players, especially Eric White, alluded to this in his post game, and we'll definitely get to that because he's one of the players in the game that the dude flat out bought out this past weekend. But you know, he said it there, and Suggs even alluded to it. There's going to come a time where, as bad as the offense has been, and they've been practicing hard and this and that, and it's not alluding to the games, the defense was so well bailing us out, and then all of a sudden he's like, you know, there's going to come a time where the offense is going to have to pick it up because we're going to suck, and it happened. Because how about a round of applause for the offense, man? Because as bad as that happened when Jimmy went down and Marlon was getting picked on, the Lions will score. Okay, and I'm sitting there thinking it was at one point the game. You know, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but one point in the game where it was 27-20 after they scored the other one, I'm like, okay, I already see this. Our offense is going to sputter. They're going to go down and tie the game, or we're going to go in overtime or something stupid, or I have to win with a 53-yard field goal with Tucker. But you know what the offense did? Went boom, 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 right down the field and touchdown. And that was surprising. That was shocking. It was refreshing because that never happens. And that shows you a complete championship caliber team because the defense was already there. They're down one casualty, but they stepped it up when they needed to, made a few huge blitzes, made a few huge plays, and the offense picked it up, man. And how proud could you be with the offense right now with that performance?
The offense is peaking just at the right time. Everyone, us included, the national media, the local media, everybody is saying how terrible this offense has been all season. And you know what? They have been. But this is when you want them to peak. December, January football, that's Joe's favorite kind of football. And the offense came out a little flat-footed at the beginning, no doubt there. Joe was definitely throwing some bombs, and they were Chris Moore and Mike Wallace and a couple other people missed some passes. You know, Joe can only do so much there. But when Jimmy Smith went down, the defense was worn out. They had to make some changes around. The offense was there and was picking up the ball. This is the exact same thing that the defense did when the offense wasn't performing well the last couple months. It's you know, it's a full team effort. It's sharing some of the blame either way, and this is what you want to see in December. A lot of teams are scrambling. Look at the Giants right now, what they're going through. The Ravens are doing everything that they can right now to make sure that they make the playoffs, get in the playoffs, and are successful in the playoffs, aren't just a one and done. And I'm highly excited for this offense. Look at what's the guy's name? Was it Patrick Ricard? I believe this was his first. Yes. This was his first touchdown, and he's a defensive player that they transitioned to the offense in this past training camp. So it's showing his hard work's paying off. This is what you want to see. This is what, you know, these guys aren't making the same mistakes over and over again. They're trying something new. Finally, they're doing it, and it's paying off because this was one of the games where you and I said it could go either way, and it's a playoff game, but the offense picked up the ball, did what they had to do, and, you know, it was they it all paid off, I guess.
It did. And I mean, and what a way to respond to the critics. I mean, I kind of missed my mark in starting off the show, but this is how I wanted to start off the show is when you went and went, Josh, how you doing? And it sucks I'm kind of doing it now in the middle of the show, but I wanted to do, you know, a moment of silence. And then you there. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just being silent like our critics today, because what a breath of fresh air. Because, and I talked about it all day long. I'm like, dude, When the Flacco has a bad game, I don't care if we win, lose, or draw. He has a bad game, man. There's a few select people that are quick to, you know, go pull the trigger, but you don't praise him for having a good game. Oh yeah, well, Joe's been playing bad all year, but hey, I have to hand it to him. It's kind of cool to see that. Hey, January Joe showed up. Wow, great. Round of applause. You don't hear that. It's negative all the time. Negativity sells this, and I don't buy into it. I'm like, no. If you're going to, praise him for – if you're gonna get him for what he did bad, praise him what he did good. And that's why I went off on Twitter today when I was like, well, Tom Brady missed a read. You don't hear anything about that. Tom Brady don't get a pass, Brandon, because he's great. I don't care if he has 5, 10, 15 Super Bowls. If you're good, you shouldn't do that. So when Joe misses a read, and that was my point, is don't sit there and say, well, Joe's the only one in the league that can miss a read. Tom Brady does that too. So, to crucify a Joe Flacco at a quarterback who's, playing mediocre in the past few seasons at best, don't nitpick him for the same things that other great ones do. And that was my point, is, coming across. I mean, me, Ray Lewis was a liability in the passing defense during the Super Bowl. But he don't get a pass because he's Ray Lewis. He was a liability. And if this was a regular season game, we'd be picking it apart. But fortunately for us, we won the Super Bowl, and that's all Bialy retired. But, Joe did great, and he shut them all up. And how about him eating that W, man? That was awesome, dude. That was vintage. And someone said, Joe Flacco, love, hate, or whatever. He goes, you just made the best Twitter GIF of 2017.
This is so much better than the ESPN dancing Joe Flacco with Raven Wings
thing. They were making fun of that yesterday.
That was terrible.
Dude, what was that?
I don't know. That was horrible.
I want that as an emoji thing, man. Because that was just outrageous. Like the whole, the wacky wings and him dancing. Who did that? Oh, my God.
I have no idea. But Joe did exactly what he had to. The offense did exactly what they had to. This is what you want to see in December. This is fantastic. And I know you didn't hear this, but Justin Forsett was on BAL radio. I couldn't watch the first part of the game because I was on the road. But right. He said – they asked who was going to be the difference maker. And for the second week in a row, he was correct. And this week he said it's going to be Eric Weddle with a pick six. And that's how the game ended. So Justin Forsett is doing fantastic at this radio gig job that he's got, because he's guessing players who's going to have the big – I think he's 2-0
now.
You think
he has the inside track, though, being that he's a former player? I don't know if he played with Weddle. Was he on the team last year? I can't remember.
Yeah, he was up and down. He was there like 4 games or something. But, it was just kind of crazy to hear him go, Eric Weddle with the pick six, that's how the game's going to end, or that's going to be the difference maker. And boom, that's what we see. Eric Weddle doing his thing.
Well, I would say it wasn't a difference maker.
Right.
But it was
the final nail in the coffin.
It was, because at that point it was a 14-point game or 17-point game. At that point, it was like as soon as that happened, it was like, all right, Hayes in the barn, let's go home. It was like, all right, we got it. But how refreshing was it that they put their most points on the board total collectively as a team, offense, defense, special teams, 44 points. It's the first week in December with 4 games left. They're peaking. And you said it, you alluded to the part in the first part of the show. They're peaking at the right time. And I've been blasting these other teams on Twitter. You look at the AFC West and you have 3 teams at 6-6. Man, that division's a mess, just like the AFC. But just, level with me here. They showed after the first 4 games of the year, okay, the AFC West looked like this. Chiefs 4-0. Okay, and the Broncos 3-1. Okay, what are they now? The Chiefs are 6-6 after starting 5-0, and the Broncos are 3-8. They've lost 8 straight games, and the Giants are a mess. They have the GM and the head coach fired because they basically just threw Eli Manning off a cliff, basically, and they're like, okay, bye, and lost their guys because of it. That was just career suicide. I don't know what that was about. I mean, we're not the 2-10 Giants who are a dumpster fire. We're not the Browns. I mean, you look at it, as bad as it was in the beginning, we're on a 3-game winning streak. Just level with me here, man. How refreshing. 3-game winning streak, 4 out of the last 5. If they found any sort of offense in Tennessee, they would have won that game too. And if they'd have had, I don't know what's still, and again, I don't live in the past here, but what's still eating at me personally is that Bears game, because that Bears game was ours.
Oh, yeah.
That one got away. I don't know where that came from, because we came all the way back down 11 points, forced overtime, and then just couldn't cover Howard. But look how quickly that gets forgiven, because I think it was the one Eric Weddle who missed that tackle, and Jordan Howard who ran up the sideline to set up that game-winning drive. But it was Eric Weddle who saved the day with a crazy blitz for the fumble. Man, he rocked Stafford, didn't he?
Yeah.
He came up from blindside, and I saw it the whole way in my seat. I was like, he's coming in blind, and Stafford don't see. And I stood up and said, look out, and boom. Stafford was just like taken out completely, and the ball was loose, and Willie Henry scooped it up. And that's another name I want to bring up. Willie Henry, and I talked to a lot of other fans out there, and they brought this up to me, and they agree. You know, Willie Henry is quietly having a season for us, and he's another force. Michael Pierce is another one. These players, you don't hear from them often. I know Suggs is having another a great year, but these players are playing difference makers for us, man. And Will Henry's going to be a force, whether he's going to continue his career here or elsewhere. But reminds me of just other players who come and gone, and he just performed great. But how about that play, man? That was just a great play and a great blitz, great dial-up.
Yeah, some absolute fantastic talent having just a fantastic year. Matt Judon, another one. Absolutely fantastic year.
I love Matt Judon.
But I do want to bring up, before we get out of here, Terrell Suggs, you said he's having a fantastic year. He's looking just as good as ever. You were in your seats. You probably didn't see this, but towards the end of the fourth quarter, and
I didn't hear this. Did I see this? What did I hear say? I mean, geez, man.
Well, like, you're busy. You're looking at what's on the field. I got, like, cameras telling me what to look at home. But Terrell Suggs, he rallied the defense. You saw him gather everybody together on the sidelines. He gave a speech, and they were able to come out and just dominate towards the end of the fourth quarter. Like, it was one of those, I know you guys are tired. We've been doing this all day. We got one more left in us. And he rallied the troops. And that's what you want to see from a veteran like Terrell Suggs.
Was that before the drive when Maurice Kennedy got let loose on the backup?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Because, dude, I keep watching that replay. It was like, you see quarterback. I don't even know who the backup was. That's just how irrelevant he is.
No, he threw his first pass in the NFL in this game.
And it was to us, basically. It was like, pretty much he went back to drop, and candidate was crazy. He came on from the correct side. You know, not to say the blind side, but he came on his good side. It was right on the right side of the blitz, right side of their line, left side on the Ravens side of the field. And the dude, you see, all you see is the quarterback. You see Kennedy. You see no players. You see the ball just like float in the air, just crazy. And little Eric Weddle just standing there just waiting for it. And he just cruises to the end zone. And it was on our side of the field. And man, when I seen it, I was like, dude, the dude got just flattened. I'm like, just telling you, I mean, we can whine and complain about Jimmy Smith taking PEDs and being out, but look at the play of Eric Weddle. Look at the play of Maurice Kennedy. Maurice Kennedy is going to be the one to step up in that role. You know, it's not going to be LeGarrette Webb. I don't care what anybody says. If it's Webb, we're going to be bad. So I say Maurice Kennedy stepping up. I mean, Marlon Humphrey's going to be there. You got Tony Jefferson, Eric Weddle. We're going to be okay. You know, we're not going to be great, but you're right. At the end of that, I didn't see the Suggs gathering the troops. I mean, obviously, I see that sometimes where it's like, hey, look what's happening on site. Like when a player gets injured, they don't show probably the whole process. But like when people go down, like when CJ Mosley was shaken up, I watched him go all the way to the sideline. I'm like watching intently on the sideline. I don't care what play is going on. Sometimes I miss plays because I'm like, I'm looking what's going on the sideline, man, because I'm like, I can see that. And that's the advantage of there being live. I can see what they're doing. Is he walking around? Is he okay? And then when I saw him, it's like when Collins, everybody was up in arms after Jimmy went down. I seen social media blow up again. Alex Collins down, holding his left arm. Oh, no, what's that mean? And then I get the vantage point of, you know, you say you get to see things on TV. Well, I get, of course, vice versa. I get to see things that are not on TV, whether they only show limited. I get to see him being worked on. Oh, he's fine. He grabs his helmet, runs right back on the field and back. And how about Alex Collins, man, having a career day? Wow. That was great. What a running game. I mean, they were 5, 6, 7 yards out of the end zone, and he just took it and ran. What dial-up? What plays the dial-up, man? The Marty Mornway did get a game ball at the end of the game, but he did call a great game. You have to hand it to him. I mean, he called great plays at the great times, and that's what makes coordinators good is, you know, calling the right plays in the right situations.
Absolutely. That's what we want to see from Marty Mornhuweg. That we've been so angry throughout this beginning of the season and how you're playing too conservative. You got to do this. Yep. You got to do that. And the last two games, we have definitely seen a charged up offense. We've seen the offense take the right moves at the right time. This is what we want to see. He deserves the game ball. He earned that game ball. And we want to see more of this. And, of course, on our Purple Friday preview, we'll be talking about Ravens Steelers 2 this season. And we'll talk about what Marty's going to bring to the table then. But Alex Collins, great great season so far. Great Sunday. And had a little tug-of-war celebration that and a little Irish dance afterwards.
Oh, that was fun. He did say he had a little something that they were practicing. So, and there's a little snapshot. Even the ref was smirking at the end of, at the end zone of that.
Who was
what a refreshing thing?
Who on defense had the celebration of them sleeping on the field? Was that Judon?
That was Matt Judon.
Was it? That was great.
Time you, to put you don't, him to bed.
The defense doesn't get to have a lot of those like celebratory dances or whatever. So it was kind of refreshing to see that on the defense.
Well, I don't think they did one with the pick six, but I feel like you're right. The defense should dial up something when they score on defense, whether it's special teams or fumble or recovery for a touchdown or pick six. But you know, another thing I wanted to talk about was something that was incredible to see, and from my vantage point, it was great, and I've seen it the whole way, was how about showing off what Joe Flacco's strength is in his arm. Ray Lewis alluded to it in his rookie year. The dude's got a cannon. You know, 10, 12 years later, he's still got a cannon, man. 10 years later, you know, he needs to let it fly. Marty needs to call these plays. We don't have elite receivers, no, but we have playmakers still. Mike Wallace is still stretching field. It was a 66-yard play. One more yard, it would have been a touchdown. I know Mike wanted to get that end zone, but how about Joe just standing tall in the pocket, letting it fly? He stepped into the throw, showed no signs of slowing down, good mechanics, and how about Mike Wallace splitting the defenders, and he hit him in stride. You know, he did throw one early in the game where it was a little behind Mikey, but at the same time, you know, he cleaned it up. But how about that the beautiful throw and beautiful catch, met him right in stride to Mike Wallace, and that's what we want to see. I saw a lot of great other plays, man. You know, there was a rollout to Ben Watson in the flat. There was a couple of good screen passes. I mean, they dialed up good plays, but you're right. You know, Marty called a great game. And I'll give him one game. You know, I'm not sitting here saying he's the greatest because, you know, the whole body of the season he hasn't been. But for this game, week-to-week league, we're going to take we're breaking down the Lions game. We're not breaking down the previous, you know, 11 games. We're talking Lions game. And the Lions game, Marty called a great game. Offense executed and played well because, again, coordinator can call great plays. But then if it's a great play call but the offense sucks and don't execute it, then we're on them. So the offense, breath of fresh air, you know, it just was incredible to see a team effort. Sam Cook kicking punts, pinning them deep again. It was just a great day at the office for the Ravens, and a 44-20 win solidifies their position in the AFC playoff race in the sixth seed at 7-5. And again, you know, they're bucking my trend because I had them losing to the Lions and Steelers, winning next year to be 9-7. Again, we have four to play. Two in a row away from the crib, and then the last two on the back end on holidays, you know, at home here in Baltimore. So this is the time. They're playing best football and where it matters. The Chargers are just as hot. I mean, the Chargers, again, you know, tale of two teams. I mean, you know, when we talked about the AFC West with the Chiefs and now the Raiders have been up and down, but the Chargers, dude, they started 0-4. And at one point in the season, they were four games out of first place, and now they've risen to a tie or virtual three-way tie right now. And they're 6-2 in their last eight, so they're rising, and they're someone to look out. So the Ravens, again, they're not a lock, but we need to win. You know, 3 out of 4 would probably get it done. And a 9-7 record, you know, if they can take care of business, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, 3-1. Runs the table at 10-6. So they've done themselves favors. Their hardest game remaining is this weekend. So the Ravens are in a prime position to really do something here and, you know, take it game by game. But right now, this was probably one of the biggest wins, if not ever. And it came, as we alluded to in the Purple Friday preview last week, man. Remember, we were worried about, hey, Matt Stafford, he's on the brink of 7 straight, you know, 4,000 passing yards. Jones, they throw it all the time. And they have no running game, and what are we going to do with Stafford? Stafford got knocked out with a bruised hand, and the backup just came in, and it just we just did it to him. So one of the two hardest quarterbacks, and that was our knock. You know, we faced backup quarterbacks since week 4 when we faced the Steelers last, And we took it to Stafford and company. Granted, you know, they woke up in the second half, but starting the game 20-0 sure put us in a prime position to win this game. And, you know, we scored 24 more than they did. And it was a 44-20 drubbing, and was impressive. It was impressive on all fronts. And right now, an NFL Network reporter, I'll leave with this, NFL Network reporter, you know, actually – acknowledge the Ravens run right now and saying when Joe Flacco throws for home, what was it, 246, 250, like 250, two touchdowns, no turnovers, the Ravens force three more. They have 29 on season. They have a crazy differential right now. And she said, you know what, in a 44-20 win, that's how you want to roll in the Steeler week. And it is Steeler week here in Baltimore, number two. And man, I'm telling you, that is what happens tonight. We're recording prior to Monday Night Football with Bengals and Steelers, but I'm telling you, no one wants to play this team right now, Brandon. I don't know about you, man, but no, the Chiefs are surging. I know we have the Steelers. We have the Patriots in the AFC. We can exact revenge on the Titans and Jaguars. But at this point, I don't know if I'm going to play this football team right now, dude. Road away. I mean, they've shown they can win away. I mean, they have some quality road wins. Don't get me wrong here. So at this point, and they're not afraid to go into New England. They're never afraid to go into Pittsburgh. They're the only team that can do that without squandering and getting away from that. So right now, the Ravens' air is pointing way up. Until they slow down, three in a row, four out of five, let's just enjoy this and we can keep rolling.
That's right. So, Josh, have we covered everything for this Red Eye review?
Quote the Raven, nevermore.
All right, guys, if you want to continue the conversation with Josh or I, you can. It's real easy. All you have to do is tweet to either one of us. You can tweet to me at BrandoCash. Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
Always at ItalianGQ52.
That's right. If you want to talk to us as well on Facebook, we are available on Facebook, facebook.com/thecallpodcast. Make sure you like us over there. We're very interactive with people asking questions, talking to us about football. Why not? Go like us over on Facebook. Now, we do this show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Write us an iTunes review, and then let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat, anywhere you are social on the web with your phone. Say, I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I listen to The Call, and you should too. So that's pretty much it for the show this week. We'll be back for our Purple Friday preview to talk Ravens Steelers. Round two of this season. But Josh, take us out the way you always do.
Brandon, thank you so much, man. And this was an awesome game to be at. I mean, we had fun tailgating. I wanted to wrap up, obviously, the show here by, you know, shout out to my, you know, my good buddy Lane, man. He made the trip. I know we discussed, obviously, you know, our travels when I went to the Monday night game. And, you know, 4 years later, he come here to Baltimore. We had a great time, you know, with tailgating. He got the sense what Baltimore Ravens tailgating's about finally. And showed him a great time, man. You know, shout out to, you know, the Snake Pit tailgate for having us over there. Always great food, great time. And, you know, cornhole was going, you know, the music was going, and we just had a blast. And then moving on to the game, you know, and just, I just wanted, you know, we had a great weekend. Me and him went to the Capitals game the night prior and had, nice, saw them win. So, yeah, man. So from a sports standpoint for myself, you know, it was in person to see a Caps great win at 4-3. And, it was great to be in that environment. Got to see a Ravens drubbing of the Lions, 44-20. Enjoy this one, guys. I mean, we have come a long season of few and far between where we've had, you know, shutouts like that where, you know, it was great to win on the defensive side, but to have the offense just come alive. And I've said this on the show many, many times. Yes, and I recognize this. I'm not drinking a Kool-Aid here and saying, you know, one game is going to erase all that, but if the Ravens are in a playoff position prior to this game with the offense being so bad and they can win on Monday Night Football 23-16 without really doing much, and they can win a game 23-0 in Packers without really doing much, you know, what's that going to do when they finally wake up? If this offense finally wakes up like they did this past weekend, ain't no one getting out alive, man, because we can march all the way to Minnesota. There's no reason why not. If this offense does that on a week-to-week basis and catches its stride with this defense, the way they're playing, no way. I'll put my money on the Baltimore Ravens side any day because they're playing with a good formula. You know, they're shutting them down when they need to. The offense rises to the occasion. They got playmakers out there. And the question remains, you know, I'm not, you know, not dubbing them as champions by any stretch. They have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of things to fix here. You know, I recognize that, but they can play with them. And unfortunately, our schedule plays out where the best team, we only played the best team twice in the AFC this year, and it was the Steelers, and we play them this weekend. So we don't play the Patriots. We didn't really play, you know, anybody outside of that are a threat in the AFC. So we lost by 3 to the Titans. We know what the Jacksonville Jaguars did, but that seems like a season ago. And again, you know, the Bengals, we beat them 20-0 there at the end of the year. That was an eon ago. So things change, you know, dynamics change, players change, and schemes change. But what remains constant right now is we're on a 3-game winning streak. And, dude, we have a war on Sunday night coming. And the league was gracious enough to leave that on a Sunday night billing and not move it. I know the Rams and the Eagles play this weekend, so I was very surprised from a standpoint of league schemes that they didn't move that game, a marquee matchup, the NFC, to a Sunday night game and left us. But we were in the biggest draws, the biggest NFL rivalry, and I think I posted this on the call today, something the magnitude of, you know, there's no better thing in football than rivalries, man, and this is one of the best they come of recent years, and the blood's going to boil over on Sunday night, man, because depending on what happens on Monday Night Football, they got a short week, and it's going to be a fantastic fight to the finish. We know what it's going to be. Enjoy this win, guys. It just was phenomenal to just take in and watch the highlights and go, man, if that's what this football team can be, if that's the ceiling, or even if it's not the ceiling, they're downright scary. And it was just amazing to have a breath of fresh air, no close game at all. Thank you, Ravens, for doing that. Guys, enjoy it. Baltimore Ravens, let's fly high.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to BrandoCash.com.
The Call is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com.